Well, I call your attention tonight to the Gospel of Matthew. Matthew chapter 27. Now, we're going to go to two other places, and actually we're going to go to three other places. But we're going to begin here in Matthew 27. The title of the message tonight is Simon the Cyrenian. Simon the Cyrenian. I've heard this man discussed, but I don't know if I've ever heard him preached on. And I was fascinated by a verse that I came across reading the Gospel of Mark this week. And we'll get to that here in a few minutes. But Simon is a very common name in the Bible. Of course, it's only one letter away from Simeon. In the Old Testament, one of the tribes of Israel was the tribe of Simeon. And of course, Simeon and Simon are very, very close. They both come from the same root word. Cyrenia was an important city in North Africa. If you're wanting to find out where that's at on a modern day map, just think about Muammar Gaddafi in Libya, all right? Now, Gaddafi is long gone, but Libya is still there. There's times in the Old Testament when you'll come across the word, like over in Ezekiel, the word put, P-U-T, that's Libya. And so Cyrenia is modern-day Libya. It was founded by the Greeks, but later on it was colonized by a group of Jews. Now, these Jews were Jews that were called Hellenist. You say, what in the world does that mean? Well, there were Jews that were Orthodox, and all they would do is speak either Hebrew or Aramaic. But you had a group that were willing to still be Jews but speak the Greek language. You remember in about 300 and maybe 30 BC, you had a man named Alexander the Great, and he conquered the known world. He defeated the Persians. That was the number three empire in Daniel's dreams. And so he conquered the known world, and of course you have the Greek culture. We're still influenced by Greek and Roman cultures today. I mean, you can go to certain places and you can see Greek architecture. All you've got to do is go do a internet search, and you can see what some of those designs look like. And so these people were Hellenistic. And so you've got this man that was probably born in North Africa, in the Libya area, but yet he was Jewish. Now, we don't really know what color he was. We think that he probably was a black man. The reason for that is simply because the area is where many black folks had migrated to. But nobody knows that for sure, but he was easily dark-skinned. Whether that's an olive complexion or whether it's more black, I don't think anybody really can be dogmatic upon that. But anyway, these folks were in the North Africa area. Well, he was traveling to Jerusalem. Now, why would he be doing that? Well, because it was the time of the Passover. You have the Passover, and they always had a feast, and the city of Jerusalem would begin to swell with people. And it would be so crowded that people would not be able to get a place inside of the city, and so they would be outside of the city, and they would sleep in tents. If they knew some people maybe in a town that was nearby, then maybe they would be able to sleep in a house. You remember Jesus and his disciples, when they would go through Bethany, which was up on the north end of town, when they would go out of the city and need a place to stay, they stayed in Bethany at the home of Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. Well, the way that Simon would be arriving to Jerusalem for the Passover would be from the south. And so it's very evident that he was sleeping, and you'll see this here in just a few minutes, that he was sleeping outside of the city, but he was coming for the Passover. Now, I want you to look with me at Matthew 27, one verse, verse 32. And it says, "And as they came out," well, what is the "they came out"? That is Jesus, who has been mocked, he has been scourged, he has been beaten, and now they have him carrying his own crossbeam on his shoulders. And as they come out of the city, you remember Jesus was not crucified inside the gates, he was crucified outside of the gates. And that was symbolic of the Old Testament, when the sacrificial lamb would be outside the gates. And so Jesus is coming out of the gates, and he is walking. It says, "They," which is the Romans, "found a man of Cyrene." And I want you to notice the first thing is that he was a found man. He was found. Can I tell you that he would have been excited before this event happened? You see, when a Jew that was devout had a chance to go and visit Jerusalem, there was an excitement about that. Can I tell you that that's still true today? If you ever visit Israel, you'll experience what I'm talking about. You'll experience it personally, but you will see people from all stripes that'll be walking the streets. You'll see people from the Orient that's there. You'll see people from the continent of Africa that's there. You'll see people from Europe that are there. And of course, you're from America, so there'll be other Americans that'll be there. There's South Americans that are there. I even ran into some Australians once. So you've got people from all over the world, and they are excited to go to Jerusalem. And when it's a festival time, it's even more exciting. And so here this man is. He lives way over in Libya, in North Africa, Cyrene. And so he sees from a distance. He looks and he begins to see the glittering roof of that temple. And he's thinking, that's it. That's where God meets with his people. And his heartbeat probably began to speed up a little bit. And as he began to get within a few miles of the city, no doubt he began to meet more and more people. And there would be an electricity with the people that were headed in that same direction. Why? Because it was a feast of the Passover. And so he is excited. I mean, he sees the temple, he sees the crowds, he thinks about the history. He's going to be walking the same streets that the prophets walked. He's going to think about guys like Isaiah, Ezekiel, Daniel, Jeremiah. He's going to be thinking about all of these prophets of old. And as he's doing this, keep this thought in mind. Until this very moment, he's never met Jesus. He may not even know who Jesus is. He just meets him at this very moment. His life is never going to be the same. But may I say that when we met Jesus, our lives was never the same. I mean, when we met the Lord, everything did a 180. We were going in one direction, and now we're following a whole new path. And so, he had never met him until this point. But I can say this, that Simon was a man that was at the right place at the right time. Now, he probably did not really think about that. He's just thinking that I'm here for the Passover, and now look what's happened to me. Look at the verse here again. And it says, as they came out, they found a man of Cyrene, Simon by name. Him they compelled to bear his cross. So in other words, all of the people that were around, you had at least one Roman soldier in the group that was marching Jesus to Golgotha. He takes his spear and he begins to see that Jesus has already fallen. Now, nobody knows how many times Jesus fell. Catholic tradition says that he fell 3 times. There's nothing in the scriptures that authenticate that. So we don't know if it was 1 time, if it was 5 times. We have no idea, but we just know that he was stumbling under the load of that cross member, which was probably somewhere around 100 pounds. And so this Roman soldier that was in the group of Roman soldiers, he's beginning to look around. Maybe he was the man that was the centurion. Maybe he was the one that spoke for these men. And all of a sudden he's thinking, who can I get to help this man? These men don't really know who Jesus is. They don't know that he's the Son of God. Only thing they know is that he is a condemned criminal to be crucified. They've already beaten him. They've already had their sport with him. They've already played the king's ransom game. And they have already done everything that they can do except kill him. And they're thinking, if he dies out here on this road, then we're going to have to carry him. And so they think, who can we get to carry this load for him? And as they're looking around, they see this man, possibly a black man. And he takes his spear, the point of it, and he touches him on the shoulder. And that man has been conscripted. Come here. Come here. Well, you're a stranger in the land. You don't have any rights. A Roman soldier, their captain, their centurion, has told you to come here. You better go. And so they compel him. In other words, he didn't have any choice about it. He was forced to carry this cross. And so we look at this situation, we look at this picture, and we see that they found this man and that he was a found man. And so now we see him carrying this cross. And a question to me is this: where are the disciples? When they were in the upper room, did they not begin to spout off, oh, we're willing to go with you both into prison and to death? But yet, when the persecution came, when the beatings came, when the condemnation came, the only thing that you see is Peter is warming his hands afar off. And as they're going outside of the gate, the only group of disciples that you see are women. And so, the disciples are nowhere around. Can I tell you that just as Simon was carrying that cross, so you and I have a cross to carry? All three of the synoptic gospels tell us that we've got a cross to bear. Now, sometimes we'll joke with each other and we'll say, well, that's just your cross to bear. And we try to be humorous about it. But the bottom line is, there are things that only you can carry, and there are things that only I can carry, and those are our crosses to bear. But just remember, Jesus said that if we take up his yoke, it's light. It's not going to be too taxing. But just remember, there are trials and sufferings that will come our way. I think that Simon was probably a burly man. He was probably physically strong. But yet, he had to carry this, and they compelled him to do it. Let me give you a second thought. Turn over to the Gospel of Luke. Go to Luke chapter 23 and verse 26. And the reason that I'm doing this is because each of these passages tell us something a little bit different about Simon. So in Luke 23, I want you to look with me at verse 26. Just one verse here. And as they led him away, they laid hold, they compelled. There's that laying hold, the compelling again. And we'll see it one more time in a minute. Simon, who was a Cyrenian, coming out of the country. Now that's a little confusing the way that is written there. When we think of coming out of the country, we think of going into a neighboring country or going through customs. But what this is, let me just tell you the way that I've written it out in the margin of my Bible. The coming out is simply coming out of the country. It's like coming into Jerusalem, but out of the countryside, all right? It's like when you visit the country. When I was a little boy growing up, and we would be going to see my grandparents. Well, they had a farm out in the country. And so somebody would say, where are you going? I'd say, either I'm going to the country or I'm going to see my grandparents. I'd say one of those two things. Well, when it says that he was coming out of the country, that means he was coming out of the countryside going into Jerusalem or headed toward the gates of Jerusalem. And so, as he was coming out of the country or out of the countryside, and on Simon, they laid the cross that he might bear it after. The second thing that I want you to see is that he was following Christ. Now you say, now wait a minute, preacher. Until this very moment, he had never even heard of Christ. But yet now, you're saying he's following Christ? Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. Matthew and Mark are not concerned with the order that we're looking at. Matthew doesn't say that Jesus was first or Simon was first, nor does Mark. But Luke, who is a doctor, he's a little more detailed in his writing. You can find that not only in the Gospel of Luke, but you find that also in the book of Acts, where Luke is concerned with the minute details of things, all right? And so, when you look at the latter part of verse 26, it says that he might bear the cross after Jesus. So point number two is, he was a following one. Not only had he been found, which the grace of God does with people, but now he is a following one. You see Jesus in the front, and you see Simon in his footsteps a few feet behind. Now, my question is this. Are you willing to follow Jesus in any circumstance? I ask myself this often. What would it take for me to stop serving Jesus? I hope that I'm being honest with myself when I say nothing. I want to be able to say that no matter what comes my way, I will follow Jesus to my dying breath. I want to be able to say that. A year or so ago, I came in contact with the son of one of our former members. And this former member, he and his wife, they came pretty faithful for a while. And then they began to get a little slack. And then they just quit coming. And a few months passed, and she began to experience some dementia. And it wasn't slow, it was quick. And she began to have some real issues. And the man was so mad at God for allowing his wife to go through that. He told his son, he said, "I will never serve God again because he let that happen to your mother." And when I heard that, I thought, man, that's awful. For the glory of God, God allows things to happen. We don't always understand, but we can always trust. And so, what would it take you in your life to happen to stop serving the Lord? And so I wrote a few questions down. Are you willing to follow Jesus if you lost some of your closest friends? Are you willing to alienate your family if it means following Jesus? Are you willing to follow Jesus if it means losing your job? Are you willing to follow Jesus if it means losing your life? I believe that Clixton Castillo would give his life right now for Jesus. And I believe that we have got other people that are willing to give their life for Jesus. I was having breakfast one morning, ended up being in probably a 2 or 3 hour meal with a fellow that preached for us back in December, Buddy Thigpen. Before he ever went to Russia, he was pastoring for 11 years in Gainesville. He had worked on our staff 4.5 years. And he called me up one day and he said, "Let's meet in Lawrenceville." Well, Lawrenceville was about halfway at that time. So he came from Gainesville, I came from Stone Mountain, and we met at the Waffle House in Lawrenceville. And when we got to the Waffle House, we sat down and we began to talk a little bit. He said, "I'm resigning my church." I said, "Okay, what are you going to do?" He said, "I'm going to Russia to be a missionary." I said, "Are you nuts?" And he said, "What do you mean?" I said, "They're communists over there. We hate them." I said, "We want them to go to hell." He said, "I can't believe how they respond to the gospel." He had been on a survey trip. And he began to preach. And he preached, he said, "I preached for an hour. And when I got done," he said, "it was standing room only." He said, "All the seats were taken and they were just standing around the walls." And he said, "When I got done, they said, 'Preach to us again.'" He said, "So I preached another hour." He said, "When I got done, they said, 'Give us about 10 minutes and then we want you to preach to us again.'" He said, "Tommy, I got people at my church," he said, "they can't wait for me to hush. And these people can't wait for me to keep going." He said, "Why would I waste my life here when there's thousands that want to hear. And I said, they will kill you. I said, you got a wife and you got a bunch of boys. And I said, what if you get over there and all of a sudden the communists take over again and they begin killing people? He said, I resign myself to the fact that I'm willing to die. And I said, well, you can't change a committed man's mind. If he's willing to put his life on the line, you know what? He's going to Russia. And he's still in Russia. And so, what are you willing to quit following Jesus over? I hope the answer is a big, fat nothing. Just nothing. Well, let me give you one more thing and we'll be done. Not only was old Simon a found one, and not only was he a following one, but I want you to go to the Gospel of Mark. I want you to go to Mark chapter 15, and I want you to look with me at verse 21. And I'm going to tell you something. When I found that verse this week, it just kind of had me kind of buzzing, right? The third thing I want you to see is he was a fatherly one. A fatherly one. I think you'll see what I mean by that in a second. Look at verse 21. And they, the Romans, compel one Simon, a Cyrenian, who passed by. So in other words, what's he doing? He's coming out of the countryside. They're coming out of the gate to crucify him. And we're going to get to that on Sunday morning. But as they're passing by, he's compelled. And it says, here's our phrase again, coming out of the countryside, the father of Alexander and Rufus to bear his cross. My question is this. Why is Alexander and Rufus, why are they mentioned? What part of the story is here? Well, you've got these two names. They've got to mean something. Can I tell you the reason that I think that these two boys are mentioned? It's because I believe that with everything that surrounds the crucifixion, Simon became a devout believer in Jesus Christ. And when he got back to his family, perhaps he left Alexander and Rufus in charge of the homestead. Take care of your mother. Now, boys, I'm going to the Feast of the Passover, but I'll be back and I'll have some stories to tell you. Did he have a story or not? Yes, he did. And so, when Mark begins to write his gospel, he writes this and he names these two boys. And let me tell you why I believe that he has written their names here. I believe, first of all, he mentions them because they were probably well known in the early church. Now let that sink in for a moment. When you begin to read about these boys, because at least one of them is mentioned in another passage that we're going to go to in a moment. These guys were known in that early church. So therefore, not only did their father get saved, but they got saved. Well, when these men are mentioned, Simon is not mentioned anymore. But the mother is. And so evidently for 30 years, because you see, Mark is not penned until 30 years after the crucifixion. Now let that sink in for a moment. He writes this little gospel 30 years after Jesus is crucified. And so from the time that Simon shares this story, these boys have accepted Christ and they have become leaders, at least one of them, in the churches that they participate in. Well, what's another reason why Mark would have mentioned this? Do you realize that there were skeptics even in Jesus' time? Where people would say, well, I just don't believe all that crucifixion stuff. He mentions that this crucifixion is here in chapter 15. He mentions it. And if somebody were to have read his letter, you know what they could have done? They could have gone and found Alexander and Rufus and asked them personally. They had heard the story. They would be able to say, yeah, my dad's told us that story for the last 15 years. And when he died, it was on his dying breath, on his lips when he was passing away. I can authenticate. My dad carried that cross for Jesus. And his life was never the same. He heard Jesus talk to those women. He stood around and he saw what was happening. He even heard a centurion say, truly, this was the Son of God. And so the skeptics could go to these two men and say, is that true? And they could authenticate it, that it was exactly true. And then I believe that they are mentioned as an example for us so that we live our lives so people can see Jesus. I want you to go over to Romans chapter 16. Romans 16. And I want you to look with me at verse 13. Only one of the boys is mentioned, so I don't know if the other one has passed on, but one of them is mentioned. And then another member of the family is mentioned. It says, salute. Give greetings. Who's he giving greetings to? The Apostle Paul is writing this letter to the Roman church, the church that is at Rome, not to be confused with the Catholic Church. It's the church that's at Rome, the epistle to the Romans. And so he says, greet, salute Rufus, chosen in the Lord. In other words, the Lord looked at him and I mean, he's just special the way that he's lived his life. So you salute him. Well, why is that? Well, I'm reading between the lines here, but I believe that when Simon got back to Cyrene and he began to tell his wife and his boys about this, they met the Lord, and then Rufus ended up in Rome. I don't know when he got married or if he graduated from college. I don't know what happened, but I know that he ended up in Rome and he served God there, and he's serving God so faithfully that the Apostle Paul gives him a shout out in Romans 16. But not only that, evidently this family meant so much that he says, not only do you tell Rufus that, but you tell his mother. Not only is it his mother, but she's my mama too. A few weeks ago, there was a lady in Richmond Hill, Georgia, that bore the same name, first name, as my mother. My mother's name is Gloria, and this lady's name is Gloria. Her last name was Erickson. Her son and I graduated from high school together. Our first year of college, we went to college together. He was in my wedding. And that senior year, I would go from my house to his house. He would be from his house to my house. And we were just close, my senior year and then the year of college. We were not as close as Buddy and I have been, but pretty close. She passed away. She had been battling cancer for some time, and I was so ill I could not even go to the funeral. But I looked at her as a second mama. When I would go to their home, it was, and she was as Southern can be. Come on in, Tommy. You know, you want something to eat? And I mean, she would just feed you. And you want to spend the night tonight? Well, that'd be great. I mean, it was 40 minutes back to my house. She'd say, y'all boys can just get up in the morning and go back, you know, go to school from here. And so I can't tell you the number of times that I spent the night in their home. And I'd come in and she'd be sitting on the couch and she would be knitting or crocheting. I think it was the one with the one needle thing that they do. I think that's crocheting. Am I right about that? Okay, I'm seeing some heads. All right. And she was just crocheting this thing right away. It was a red, white, and blue afghan. And I just thought, boy, that's pretty. And when I graduated in May of 74, she gave me a box. And in that box was a red, white, and blue afghan. Can I tell you, in my closet at my house tonight, there's a red, white, and blue afghan? I've threatened to kill anybody in my family that messes with it, puts a hole in it, and they better not ever get it near them stupid dogs of mine. But she was like a second mama to me, Miss Gloria Ann Erickson. And I'm telling you, when old Rufus and his mother were around Paul, they treated him wonderful. She treated him so good that he was like, she's my mama. And so we see him salute old Rufus. You notice he doesn't say anything about Simon. That's kind of like when Joseph goes silent in the scriptures. Most Bible scholars think that means that he died. And Simon is probably with the Lord right now. And so as Saul closes out this letter, he has a list of people that he's mentioning. And old Rufus and his mom is one of them. So, he was a fatherly man. He led his family to the Lord. There's nothing that a father or a mother can do that's any more important than to see that your kids know the Lord. Simon the Cyrenian. He was a found man. He was a following man, but he was also a fatherly man. Well, that's a primer for Sunday morning. Let's stand together.